The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
Then it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our
to the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
We love you.
Oh, yeah. Good day, Tokers and Tokettes, and welcome. It is show number 100 of the independent voice of the marijuana media. That's right, the Russ Belville Show number 100. Thank you for being a part of it and making it happen. We are so happy that we have made it to this milestone. And today, of course, is November 29th, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. We've got all sorts of things to bring to you today. Before we do, let's introduce our guest here in the studio, our co-host here, Brian the Red. How you doing, Brian?
Hey, yeah, I'm doing just fine. Missed you on the show last night.
I missed you too, but luckily enough,
We got a replay.
3 o'clock, we're going to hear Red Eyes Reggae Flashback.
No, not 3 o'clock. He still got the old schedule.
5 o'clock, sorry. 5 o'clock.
It's all right. We're coming up right after the show today. We'll have the replay of last night's Red Eyes Reggae Flashback.
Three, sir.
Three,
something like that. 5 o'clock.
Classic.
Red Eyes Reggae Flashback. Check it out. Brian the Red doing great work. On today's show, all sorts of interesting stuff. Before we get to it, I do want to make a quick announcement. We have confirmed for tomorrow's show at 3:30 Pacific time, Brave Michaela will be here in the studio. The 7-year-old girl you've been hearing about on all of the national news, who's a medical marijuana patient, she'll be here in the studio with her mom and her stepdad talking all about the media attention they've received and what it's like to be a 7-year-old on medical marijuana. So we'll talk about that on tomorrow's show. On today's show, I was forwarded this incredible video from a guy named Stephen Crowder, a young man who basically put together an 8-minute debunking of the arguments for marijuana legalization. And he did so in a very disingenuous way by interviewing teenagers and a crazy old man and a bunch of other stuff. So we're going to get to that at 1:30. I'm going to show you the video in its entirety, let you make your own decisions on it. And then for the radical rant, we'll come back and debunk the hell out of that thing. Also on today's show, it's Groovin' Thursday. So we get some Groovin' Thursday music for you at 20 after the hour. We've got our 420 headline news coming up right after this first break. And in the news today, all sorts of interesting headlines, including the zip tie program in Mendocino County has been subpoenaed by the federal government. The lab testing scandal in Massachusetts is increasing and has led to the release of some prisoners. Also, we've got news from Illinois on their medical marijuana vote, a police chief in Indiana who says legalize, and the potential for hemp in Kentucky. Then, for behind the headlines, we're going to take a look at the NFL and what they're going to do about legalized marijuana in Washington and Colorado.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
Rock on, Wisconsin.
Look, when I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Remember, Mr. President, you once were just one bust away from being Barry the drug criminal.
Life ain't a box of chocolates gum. That's why people smoke weed and take bumps and drink way too damn much and get drunk and do it all over again first of the month.
Now it's time for our 420 headline news. I'm Russ Belville. Massachusetts lab scandal. Nearly 200 prisoners released as a result of allegedly faked drug test results. This from CBSNews.com. Nearly 200 inmates have been released from prison and their cases put on hold after a chemist at a Massachusetts state drug testing lab was accused of faking results. Public Safety Secretary Mary Beth Heffernan told lawmakers at a public hearing Wednesday that while investigators are looking at about 34,000 cases overall, 195 individuals have been released, including 79 in Boston. On Tuesday, officials said Governor Deval Patrick has ordered a file-by-file review of every case handled by the chemist, Annie Dukin, who investigators said manipulated drug samples at a former Department of Public Health drug lab where she worked for 9 years. Sheriff Allman says Mendocino County pot permit holders weren't promised immunity. This from the Ukiah Daily Journal. Mendocino County Sheriff Tom Allman spoke Monday about the subpoena the county received in late October from the U.S. Attorney's Office for the records the county keeps regarding its medical marijuana ordinance. While it's still not clear to him why the federal authorities want the records, Allman noted that the county's now canceled permitting program for collectives to grow up to 99 medical marijuana plants never guaranteed the applicants immunity from federal prosecution. Allman said, quote, we're going to comply with the subpoena. The county stopped issuing permits and reverted to the 25-plant limit for all growers after the U.S. Attorney's Office threatened to file an injunction against the county's medical marijuana cultivation ordinance and seek legal action against county officials who supported it. In 2011, the sheriff's office received 95 permit applications and approved 91 of them. Sheriff Allman said, quote, as far as the sheriff's office is concerned, every dollar we've taken in has a paper trail, end quote. Collectives applying for the permit had to provide the applicants' names, mailing addresses, physical addresses, phone numbers, driver's license numbers, and doctor's recommendations for all patients for whom the medical marijuana was to be grown. This info will now be turned over by Sheriff Allman to federal prosecutors. Illinois delays a vote on legalizing medical marijuana from the Chicago Tribune. The Illinois General Assembly on Wednesday put off a vote to legalize marijuana use for medical purposes because the measure lacked the support for approval, its chief sponsor said. Democratic Representative Lou Lang did not request a vote on his proposal because he did not want it to fail. The proposal for a 3-year pilot program would make Illinois the second most populous state in the nation after California to allow medical marijuana. Lang said he could try again to pass the proposal when the Illinois legislature meets in early December. The Illinois bill would be the most restrictive in the country, according to Lang. Indiana State Police, the chief says, legalize and tax pot. This from WFPL.org. The leader of Indiana State Police says he has no objection to legislative efforts to ease penalties for marijuana possession in the Hoosier State. When asked about the drug in a budget committee meeting, ISP Superintendent Paul Whitesell said he spent some 40 years trying to enforce various marijuana laws. He said, quote, it's here, it's going to stay, there's an awful lot of victimization that goes with it. If it were up to me, I do believe I would legalize it and tax it, particularly in sight of the fact that several other states have now come to that part of their legal system as well. End quote. At least two Indiana lawmakers say they'll sponsor bills that would decriminalize possession of small amounts of marijuana for recreational or medical use. Hemp advocates tout hemp's economic potential. This from CBS News. Kentucky Agriculture Commissioner James Comer sees untapped potential for hemp from farm to factory. Comer, a family farmer himself, says that making industrial hemp legal will be his top priority in the 2013 General Assembly. U.S. Senator Rand Paul, a fellow Republican, is a leading supporter of federal legislation to remove restrictions on hemp cultivation. Seed suppliers could gain a new market, so could businesses that clean grain or crush seeds to extract their oils. Horse bedding dealers could offer a new product made from hemp. Farm implement dealers could benefit, as well as other agribusinesses, hemp advocates say. Comer's efforts to make hemp mainstream include trying to persuade the Kentucky Chamber of Commerce to back his legislation. Kentucky Chamber President David Atkison said the organization is studying the issue. Atkison said his own family has ties to the crop. His mother's family grew hemp during World War II to aid the war effort. And that's your 420 headline news for today, Thursday, November 29th, 2012. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we're going to take a look at the National Football League and the coming conflict on cannabis. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show. We'll be right back after this.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
And now, a message from former President George W. Bush to remind the American people of our responsibility in our nation's war on certain American substances, non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
That's right, America, use less drugs. Put down the Prozac, the Vioxx, and the Levitra, and turn to the herb. Use less drugs. Our national policy is no longer just say no. It's now just slow down.
You get me too high. I overanalyze. If you've ever been too high, then you can sympathize. You get me too high.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for us to go behind the headlines here at the Russ Belville Show, and we're taking a look at the after effects of marijuana legalization in Washington State and Colorado. And this has caught the attention of Dave Zirin, who's a sports writer, and he's got a article that's published up at thenation.com called The NFL's Coming Conflict on Cannabis, and some interesting stuff from this article. Bob McNair, owner of the Houston Texans, currently the number one team in the AFC, after saying he would never have a persistent user of drugs on his team, made a point to also add, "I'm not talking about someone who smoked marijuana." Now, for decades, the NFL officialdom has discussed marijuana and players who do pot like they were bit players from Reefer Madness, Zirin writes. State referenda earlier this month legalized small amounts of marijuana for personal use in Colorado and Washington State. These votes threaten to raise a massive legal and public relations headache for the NFL. Two of their teams, the Denver Broncos and Seattle Seahawks, now play in states where marijuana is legal. Zirin continues, "As a top player who asked to remain anonymous said to me, quote, I'd rather use marijuana edibles or vaporizing to manage pain over prescription pain pills, much less addictive and less harmful to kidneys and liver," end quote. I'll take a break from Zirin's writing here for a second for a personal observation, too. You know, everyone who watches the show knows I'm a huge fan of the Green Bay Packers. And going back in the day when Brett Favre was the quarterback of the Packers, you may recall that he had a very prominently discussed painkiller addiction that he had gone through and had you know, been using and abusing painkillers for a long, long time. So this point about allowing these athletes, these NFL players who are always, you know, suffering from some sort of pain, to be able to use it with to use cannabis to treat it instead of something like Oxycontin or Percocet, right there, you're going to do so much for the health of the players just with that one move alone. Let me continue. Zirin continues by saying, NFL spokesman Greg Aiello didn't even let the election night confetti fall to the floor before he told USA Today, quote, "The NFL's policy is collectively bargained and will continue to apply in the same manner it has for decades. Marijuana remains prohibited under the NFL substance abuse program. The Colorado and Washington laws will have no impact on the operation of the policy," end quote.
So, in fact, we
reported that the very next day, I do believe, that the NFL, you know, first thing they did when the legalization came out, not just NFL either, Major League Baseball and the NCAA came out and, you know, very quickly said, hold on. Don't y'all start smoking the pot now. So to continue with Zirin's article, he says, the problem, and this to me is the important nugget here. The problem is that even by the NFL's own guidelines, they are not actually true. As Mike Florio on ProFootballTalk.com pointed out, the policy only prohibits the illegal use of marijuana. And this is interesting. This is on Pro Football Talk. You can find it at NBCSports.com. It's ProFootballTalk.NBCSports.com. And he goes on to say, this is Florio writing on this one, where he says, the policy prohibits only the illegal use of marijuana. While players may not abuse legal substances like alcohol, legal drugs and alcohol may be used. He does go on to say, of course, this doesn't mean that members of the Broncos and Seahawks should celebrate with a little waking and baking. For starters, a fight with federal officials is potentially looming before the new state laws become effective. Well, see, this is where these writers don't understand how the law works. And they don't understand, they say that there's going to be a fight with federal officials before the laws become effective. December 6th, a week from yesterday, you know, 6 days away, smoking pot and having pot is legal in Washington State. January 6th, smoking pot and having pot is legal in Colorado. It doesn't matter what the feds think about that. The feds can't force the state to criminalize marijuana, and the feds are going to have to come in and bust those players themselves. There's nothing they're going to be able to bust them for, you know, at the state level. So Florio needs to get a little, you know, clue there, a little bit of an education there about how this is going to work. Broncos and Seahawks will be legal. It doesn't matter what the federal government has to say about it. So going back to the original piece on The Nation from Zirin here, unspoken amidst the jokes about Denver truly playing in Mile High Stadium is the fear that in the NFL's front office that a league-wide relaxed marijuana policy in accordance with state laws would be a public relations nightmare. In the bizarre macho ethos of the NFL, alcoholism is ignored, painkiller abuse is encouraged, and other violent off-field behavior is winked at because these are the products of the kind of destructive masculinity that the NFL markets every Sunday. Marijuana, in contrast, is for hippies, beatniks, and longhairs. In reality, weed wouldn't turn NFL players into extras from half-baked. Players will use marijuana either to wind down after a game, as a healthier, less addictive alternative to alcohol, or as a way to manage their pain. This last point is particularly explosive for the NFL. Amidst lawsuits, suicides, and documentaries, there is unprecedented attention being paid to the physical toll players have to endure, particularly concussion and brain injury. Medical marijuana is recommended by doctors for headaches, light sensitivity, sleeplessness, and loss of appetite, all of which just happen to be symptoms associated with concussions. The idea that the league would deny a player their legal pain relief of choice seems barbaric. It's their pain, and it's their right to treat it however they see fit. So good article from Zirin there. And we're working, me and Herb Thrasher are trying to get Dave Zirin on the show to talk about this a little bit more in depth. But it is truly barbaric that we would allow these athletes to use OxyContin and Percocet, and Darvocet, and all sorts of sets, that we would allow them abuse their bodies physically every day that they play and practice, but that we would deny them something that's legal in the state they live in for their health. Unbelievable. But that sound means that we need to do something for our health.
Yeah, let's have a little safety break.
Safety meeting. When we come back, we'll get into our Daily Toker Tunes. Stick around.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Hi, I'm Cannabis.
Non-alcohol.
Do you know that I can be used to treat a number of physical and psychological conditions like depression, Huntington's disease, and osteosclerosis?
Your mother's an osteoporosis.
I can also be used to help those who are abusing our friend over here.
You know what the problem is with you? You think you're better than everybody else. Hey, look at me, I'm weak.
Okay, I actually do prefer to be called Cannabis. I'm illegal.
I'm illegal. Because weed makes you stupid.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while. Share. Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Groovin' Thursday, featuring rap, hip-hop, soul, and funk music. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, everybody, 22 after the hour, and for today's Daily Toker Tune, I'm going to turn to the funk, rock, thrash, punk, muddled area of musical genres that we find out here in the West Coast sometimes. You know, on our Daily Toker Tunes, that we love the funk on Groovin' Thursday, and if you love the funk, check out Big Daddy Fink's Funky Roller Rink tonight at 8 o'clock Pacific. We got a new episode. You're going to love it. It's some more funk for the ladies, so check that out. Show enough. But, of course, the big band in funk was P-Funk, you know, Parliament Funkadelic. And in one of their songs, they warned about the coming of the Funkapus. Oh, the Funkapus. And from that emerged the name of a band that came out of the San Francisco Bay Area in 1986 called Psychofunkapus. Now, just for the name alone, that wins points for me right there. Psychofunkapus. Their main period of time that they were together was 1986 to 1992. Kind of a hybrid of funk and rock and all sorts of interesting sounds. And they got really popular through the late 80s. In fact, they were so popular, a lot of bands you know of opened for Psychofunkapus, like the Deftones and Green Day. And No Doubt, as they were coming up in the world, they were opening for Psychofunkapus. And Psychofunkapus, in turn, had actually opened for Pearl Jam, the Sugar Cubes, Was Not Was, and a bunch of other great bands as well. Now, the band consisted of Gene Genie and Manny Martinez on vocals. Then Gene Genie left after the second album. Manny Martinez kept the vocals on from that point
In 1992, the band kind of fell apart, stopped recording. But in 2010, they got back together for LA's City of Hope Cancer Center benefit at Slim's in San Francisco. So the Psychofunkapus is still out there and still rocking. So we're going to turn over now to Psychofunkapus and play this song for you that is perfect for what we're into here. It's called Freedom. The Jimi Hendrix tune, Freedom, covered by Psychofunkapus. If you like this and other tunes, check out radicalbus.com/music.
Oh, my God, marijuana day. Oh
my God, my grandson would know that by heart. So what is it, you smoke all the pot you want that day?
No, I went to a party and they had it in the brownies. I mean, I couldn't stop laughing. Well, I got drunk once and I couldn't stop laughing.
Well, I got drunk and threw up.
If you do marijuana, you get really hungry and the food tastes
that's
really
good.
If you're making love, it's more intense.
A big bottle that Joey has in his room.
You want to see it?
Yeah.
Okay, get up.
This is a bong.
Oh, my God. It's called a bong?
I think so. My grandson would know. B-O-N-G, bong.
And that's a form of marijuana?
Bit of bing, bit of bong. Now, where do you smoke from here? See, I just thought you go like, no, I thought you, and no, he goes, you go like this. And then you suck it out. That's how it happened. Is that what you do?
And then I go,
you suck it out.
Yarr!
starving pirates here. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show.
Yeah, we've made a call on the controversial marijuana ballot question, Amendment 64. Floyd, we can safely say this is going to pass.
It is legal in the Constitution to possess and grow up to 6 plants.
You cannot be arrested for being in possession of an ounce of marijuana.
Colorado and the state of Washington, they voted to legalize marijuana, not for medical use, but for recreational use.
This is the beginning of taking apart prohibition one state at a time. That's how they did it 80 years ago against alcohol. That's how we're going to do it now against marijuana.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death. Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind. If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face-to-face with the monster of marijuana, he dropped dead from fright.
You know, it's not easy countering 7 decades of propaganda in a 2-hour show, but let's try. It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Reefer Madness Debunked.
All right, before we get into this, let me just say I don't know who the hell Steven Crowder is. Don't know who this guy is at all. I just got it forwarded to me through Facebook or a tweet or something, and it took me to a conservative website, and I could tell because all the other side topics on the bar there were, you know, anti-Obama this and anti-Democrats that. So it was coming from a conservative site, and the author on this conservative site posted this video. That supposedly is a takedown of all the pro-legalization arguments, right? And the conservative writes this blog, basically says that Steven Crowder pretty much destroys every pro-marijuana argument and follows that up by saying, stoners lie or they're just too stupid to know the truth. Yeah, so that I did not like that very much myself. And, yeah, exactly. So, but I gotta get, before I get into this, let me give Steven Crowder, by the way, if you're looking at the webcam right now, he's the guy on the left interviewing the teenager there. You know, good looking guy, probably in his late 20s, I would assume, maybe early 30s, but, and I gotta give him points on his delivery, his editing, his cinematography. I mean, this is a really well done video. The music, the cuts, everything is very well done about this. And I also have to give him a little bit of credit because at the very beginning of it, he kind of makes the point that this really should be a constitutional argument, which is something conservatives always come back to, the whole state's rights, you know, does the government have the right to do this kind of thing? But his supposed takedown of the pro-legalization arguments is pretty pathetic. Let me just give you the preview of this before we start the video so you can watch it yourself and maybe try to guess what I'm about to say about it. The author of the conservative website says Crowder's video is awesome for making the following points. Number one, marijuana is more harmful than alcohol, not less. Yeah, I know. Settle down. Legalizing pot increases use. It does not decrease use. There is almost no one in prison for convictions of marijuana use alone. Marijuana makes you more likely to suffer from psychosis. And the biggest reason for the increase in use among young people is the propaganda that marijuana is harmless. So, with that in mind, I turn you over now to the video. This is Steven Crowder with his video entitled, Marijuana! You know, I shout when it's all caps, right? Marijuana! And it's 2 exclamation points, so it really deserves a shout, I think. Marijuana! The truth! Here you go. Enjoy.
With the recent legalization of marijuana in Colorado, talk of ganja is all the rage today. Is it harmful? Is it harmless? Should it be legal? Should it be illegal? What kind of authority does the federal government have? The problem is that a lot of information out there is dead wrong. So So I'm here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, one of the first cities to actually decriminalize the drug, and home to a few more than enthusiastic supporters.
Free the weed!
In order to get to the bottom of the issue. Marijuana, should it be legalized?
Yeah.
Good thing.
I definitely think that it should be legal.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Government's cracking down on unhealthy snacks and vending machines. Big Gulp's banned in New York, I'm sure you've heard of this. Good idea, bad idea?
I think that it's a good idea.
I don't want to say some people have reached the point where maybe they shouldn't make their own decisions, but I think that's what it's becoming.
I think it's kind of good, you know, because then, you know, it's better for everyone's health.
Think marijuana should be legalized?
Yeah. I mean, you can do whatever you want to your own body.
Except the Big Gulp.
Touche.
Oh, Big Gulps, huh? All right. Well, see you later.
This band... this legal. Now, there are some people who think that the federal government does not have the authority to make drugs illegal, regardless of how harmless they may be, and that's a fully legitimate discussion to have. However, among everybody that we asked, everyone thought that marijuana should be legal, and not one made a constitutional argument. They all actually said,
it's way less harmful than a lot of things, like such as alcohol.
I think it's just another drug like alcohol.
It's not really harming anyone.
It doesn't really cause harm in most people's life, and certainly less harm than alcohol.
So considering that this is the premise under which the discussion of marijuana legalization is now being discussed, it's important to find out if it's true. So we sat down with Dr. Phyllis Boniface, a doctor who specializes in psychiatric care and, more importantly, the possible effects of marijuana.
It's actually very damaging, and to compare it with alcohol, I mean, just to give you a basis for comparison, humans are designed to metabolize alcohol in the liver at a certain rate per hour. The brain is largely fat, and this drug is stored in fat. And so what happens is, after the intoxication is long over, we have a drug that's hanging around exerting an effect on your nervous system for weeks to months. People who smoke at a young age have a much higher incidence of psychosis and psychotic disorders.
I am a former community college history teacher who did time in a federal Christian Zionist drug gulag.
We think that there's a gene that predisposes people to schizophrenia, for example.
People here work for the military industrial complex that kill people all around the world.
And when people are exposed to marijuana, they have an onset of their illness about 3 years before we normally would see it, and their psychosis is much worse.
The entire drug war is a fraud. The reason why marijuana and other drugs are kept illegal,
right,
is because if they were legalized, the Pentagon, the CIA, and the White House would miss the money.
Now, forgive me, my crazy old pothead speak is a little rusty, but allow me to try and translate for a second. The war on drugs waged by this government has been largely ineffective. In legalizing drugs here in the United States, I believe that we would reduce the failed war on drugs, decrease crime, and likely see a result of less overall use, as in countries abroad who have followed such a policy. There's this idea that legalizing marijuana would free up a ton of space in our penitentiaries, but it's just not true. I have the numbers here in front of me, okay? Less than 0.1% of state prisoners were marijuana possession offenders with no prior sentences. Let's take that a step further. Only 1.4% of state prisoners were drug offenders held for crimes only involving marijuana. You said you did time in a federal penitentiary,
right,
for nothing more than marijuana possession.
Attempted distribution.
Attempted distribution. What's right. That exactly?
Well, that means I was trying to sell it. When I sold marijuana to my friends and my customers, I was providing a community service.
Any prior infractions?
DUIs.
So when you think of prisons filled with people like this, it's actually more like this.
Okay, a few things. Firstly, here in the United States, where marijuana has either been decriminalized or legalized, its usage tends to increase more than some of you may know. We went to community high school here in Ann Arbor to ask teenagers about their experiences with marijuana. The results were shocking. Have you ever smoked marijuana?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I have.
Yep.
I have.
Yes.
So your mom knows?
Now she does.
I've been doing it probably 3 years now.
15, been smoking for 3 years. You know what I was doing at 12? Playing Pogs. Out of all the students we'd interviewed, only two had not smoked marijuana. Their biggest reason for trying it? Surprise!
It's harmless.
There's no bad side effects.
I don't think it can be necessarily harmful. It's not like a bad drug.
It's a plant.
You mean it's natural?
Yeah.
So's uranium.
Well,
after all, it's got nothing on a 16-ounce Mr. Pibb, but funnily enough, the perception of marijuana being harmless, as largely pushed by today's marijuana lobby, has statistically resulted in increased use among teenagers.
we know that it affects myelinization, and myelinization is what determines the maturity and the development of the brain. People don't know it, but your brain is actually developing into your early to mid-20s. When we're altering the myelinization, we're actually altering the way your brain will function for the rest of your life.
That being said, the kids do seem to think that it might be more prevalent here than nationally because...
In Ann Arbor, yes, I guess. Everybody seems to have some.
Shocker. Despite what people say, the more lenient the drug laws, the more likely people, including kids, are to light up. What about the idea that ending the drug war would reduce crime, put drug cartels out of a job? You think maybe these cartels who operate in illegal activity...
Yeah. Probably. I mean, yeah. But I mean, you still get that extra revenue, right?
Well, it's like here in Ann Arbor, right? It's legal, essentially, to use it medicinally. We just stopped by the high school. What people do is buy it from the dispensary, get a prescription, and then go sell it at a high school.
Yeah, I know some people that have done that, yeah.
You know people that have done that?
I may or may not, yeah.
Yes, it appears to be that people who make money through crime tend to find another way to make money through crime.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
So, if we legalize drugs, would that really be better for today's law-abiding citizens?
The myth that nobody's ever died from a THC-related accident is just not true. The reason people believe that it hasn't happened is because it's a tougher process to go through to test for it.
You smell something, Rabbit?
Fear.
I can take your blood alcohol level just by a breath test.
You fellas been doing a bit of boozing, have you? Sucking back on grandpa's old cough medicine?
It's not a Miranda right or anything like that. It's just based on your driver's license. Where if I want to get your THC level, I have to get a warrant to take your blood from you or urine.
You're f***ing crazy!
Do I want to have it legal for me to do? Well, then the police have to have more rights to be able to check you for it. And where do people fall on that line?
And as a matter of fact, there is some data to suggest that legalization actually increases crime, as seen here from the LAPD DEA. Now, the reason the numbers might be different from the crime increase during the Prohibition era is because of one key difference. During Prohibition, the American government decided to suddenly ban an activity in which a vast majority of Americans engaged. In legalizing drugs, you'd be doing the exact opposite. You would now be allowing and in some ways encouraging a practice in which currently only a minority of Americans engage.
Listen, at the end of the day, I can understand somebody saying, okay, marijuana's harmful. Legalizing it will likely result in increased usage and have possibly some negative societal ramifications here in the United States. But the federal government does not have the authority, and it's been largely ineffective in waging the war on drugs. That's a completely legitimate argument, and there can be arguments made on both sides. What I have a problem with, however, is the discussion being based on a premise that is a lie. That is a huge disservice to our political discourse today, and more importantly, generations of the future. You need any more proof?
Palestinians have been in camps for about 60, and you Jews put them there.
Israel. Okay, first off, I am not Jewish.
9/11, and anyways, okay, you look Jewish anyways.
All right, so there's people out there that are saying this is trolling. Some are saying it's satire. His tweet address is at S. Crowder, if you want to get in on the discussion. I don't think it's satire, and I don't think it's trolling either. I think this guy's serious. So I'm going to take a look at this and debunk it bit by ever-loving bit. Stick around. That's coming up next here on the Russ Belville Show. Plus, we'll take some of your calls an hour or two on the subject.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420-friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Have you considered medical marijuana? Double-blind, peer-reviewed studies have found cannabinoid therapies to be successful in treating the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, brain cancers, chronic pain, diabetes mellitus, dystonia, fibromyalgia, GI disorders, hepatitis C, HIV/AIDS, hypertension, incontinence, MRSA, multiple sclerosis, osteoporosis, pruritus, rheumatoid arthritis, sleep apnea, and Tourette's syndrome.
as well as anecdotal evidence suggesting relief from anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress, plus reduction in the need for narcotic painkillers. Side effects of medical marijuana can include euphoria, relaxation, anxiety, panic reactions, paranoia, tachycardia, dry eyes, dry mouth, concentration and reaction time impairment, appetite increase, and in 37 states, arrest and incarceration. But medical marijuana is non-toxic and cannot cause overdose. Medical marijuana. It's not for everyone, but ask your doctor if medical marijuana may be right for you.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson, or Norman. And if you're one of the 26 million Americans who smoked marijuana last year, you need to get involved in the drive to legalize marijuana. We need your help to stop the senseless arrest of more than 800,000 Americans each year on marijuana charges. Together, we can end marijuana prohibition and stop the arrests of marijuana smokers. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at norml.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth!
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
All right, so if you enjoyed the marijuana, the truth video from Steven Crowder, I'm just here to tell you that Steven Crowder is a reefer mad idiot. Let's get right to all of his points. In fact, I'll even address some of the points that weren't originally addressed by the conservative. Let me just remind you, I'll run them down real quick again. They're on the board if you can see them on the webcam. One, marijuana is more harmful than alcohol, not less. Two, legalizing pot increases use, it does not decrease it. Three, there is almost no one in prison for convictions for marijuana use alone. Four, marijuana makes you much more likely to suffer from psychosis. And five, the biggest reason for the increase in use among young people is the propaganda that it's harmless. So I think we're all ready. Are you all ready to rumble? Let's get to it. All right. Is alcohol more dangerous than marijuana? Well, let's take a look at all the people who've ever died from marijuana overdoses. Oh, right. Zero. Because it's non-toxic, whereas some college kid overdoses and dies on alcohol almost every weekend. Maybe we should compare all the public vomiting, domestic violence, and auto fatalities from marijuana as compared to alcohol to determine how harmful it is. Now, yes, marijuana is fat soluble. Yes, the brain is mostly fat. But from there, all facts and reason and science go completely out the window. The reason the liver processes alcohol is because its job is to remove poisons from the body. Doesn't it say something about drugs that our bodies fight to reject them as quickly as possible and all their metabolites within about 3 days, but our bodies hold on to those cannabinoids as long as they possibly can? And by the way, our bodies do not have an endoethanol system, but we do have an endocannabinoid system, which is what cannabis triggers for the high that we're experiencing. Point number two, as far as, what was the point two? Legalizing pot increases use. Numerous studies have shown that the illegality or legality of marijuana has little effect on its use. As his video shows, plenty of teenagers are getting a hold of it, despite it being illegal in Michigan for all but medical use. Yeah, sure, Ann Arbor is decriminalized, but I can find you the same set of pot-smoking teens in Enid, Oklahoma, if I want to. But suppose legalizing marijuana does increase use. So? Perhaps that's a bunch of people who choose pot over OxyContin, and their health improves as they see fewer side effects. Maybe it's a bunch of college kids who trade keg stands for gravity bongs. Nobody ever seems to worry about increased alcohol use because I never hear any campaigns to ban humorous Super Bowl beer ads. Are there more teens smoking marijuana in medical and decrim states? Yeah, there are. But there were already more teens smoking before they became medical or decrim states. It's not the law changes that make people smoke pot. It's that where people are smoking pot, they change the law. His point number three was no one in prison for marijuana use alone. Always love this one. The stats on people in prison for marijuana. Now, first of all, kind of sucks for that 0.1 to 1.4%, doesn't it? What, we have to imprison a token number of first-time nonviolent marijuana offenders in order to scare the rest? They're the sacrificial lambs? Is that the theory behind that? But really, this little 1%-ish figure they keep citing is bullshit. Remember, they're citing marijuana-only offenses. Well, guess what happens if you're busted with a pound of weed and you happen to have a lawfully purchased shotgun? Ah, there's a gun charge. Now you're no longer a marijuana-only prisoner, are you? How about if you have a kid in the house? Felony child endangerment. Now you're no longer a marijuana-only prisoner. Oh, and did you and a bunch of friends chip in together to buy that pound? Aha! Felony conspiracy. You're no longer a marijuana-only prisoner. And don't forget all the probationers, parolees, and third strikers who get busted for even as little as a joint or a failed drug test, who then get sent back to prison for the original crimes that don't register as marijuana only. Plus, this figure does not include the people who end up in county and city jails, many of them there because they can't afford bail, others sentenced there by local statutes that are more severe than the state statute. This comes into effect particularly for my friends listening in Colorado, for the people who say, well, you know, Amendment 64 is awful and Colorado already had decrim. Yes, you're right, it did. Colorado had decrim up to 2 ounces, where you would only get a summons to appear in court, and then if you didn't appear in court, there would be a bench warrant sent out for you, and you get 15 days in jail. It also doesn't consider that certain cities in Colorado, like Lakewood, had more stringent municipal penalties for holding onto marijuana than the state did, and they could lock you up in the city jail for possession of marijuana. I digress. Number 4, marijuana makes you much more likely to suffer from psychosis. And, you know, bravo for finding the schizophrenic old guy to, you know, make your case there. That, you know, a lot of integrity there. Let me just give you the facts. A 60-year study of mental illness in the United Kingdom found no rise in the rates of psychosis or schizophrenia, even as the popularity of cannabis grew during the hippie era. And another meta-analysis of mental hospitals in England, Wales, and Ireland found no variation in schizophrenic rates or admissions from 1996 to 2006, even as the dreaded skunk was becoming so popular. The fact is, about 1% of the population is schizophrenic. Now, indeed, if they smoke weed, it can exacerbate and hasten the onset of their psychosis. But schizophrenia is a complex disorder. It's mostly rooted in genetics and somewhat in environment. Now, certainly, if cannabis brought on psychosis in mentally healthy people, we should have seen a massive rise in schizophrenia in America correlating with 1979 when 60% of high school seniors admit to having tried pot. And we didn't see it. And the number 5 point, the biggest reason for the increase in use among young people is the propaganda that's harmless. This is where these right-wing conservatives who might be cool with legalizing, you know, for constitutional reasons so they can get their states' rights back, you know, to be able to ban gay marriage and do other things that they want their states to do. This is where they are against us on, you know, what might be called the left in drug policy and so forth, where we're the evil Socrates, man. We're poisoning the minds of the children. Let me get to that point. Increased use by young people, no doubt, is reflective of propaganda, but not from our side. That little nice chart you have about the perception of risk versus the youth use does indeed show that the riskier kids think pot smoking is, the less they'll do it. In the late 1970s, pot was thought of as harmless and more kids did it than has ever been measured. Then you see an increase in the risk perception beginning in 1980 when Ronald and Nancy Reagan and the whole Just Say No campaign started. This is your brain on drugs. You know, all those commercials, all the over-the-top lies about the risks of marijuana combined with the increase in drug testing did indeed scare teenagers into not using marijuana. I was there in the 1980s as a teenager. But then came Bill Clinton. Notice in that chart how the risk perception plummets in Clinton's first term. How do you tell kids smoking pot will lead them nowhere when a pot smoker is president? And then came the medical marijuana movement in Northern California in the mid-1990s, and then came the Google. It's not so much that drug legalizers came up with awesome propaganda about marijuana that turned the kids on. It's that drug legalizers have been telling the truth about marijuana But only with the advent of the internet did we have the means of countering the million-dollar ad buys from the government. And then kids who had been told, quote, I now have evidence that smoking one marijuana cigarette is equal in brain damage to being on Bikini Island during an A-bomb blast. End quote. President Ronald Reagan, 1981. Those kids who'd heard that crap could now look the facts up and look up the science on cannabis on the internet. And still, even as 18 states have medicalized, 15 states have decrimmed, and 2 states have legalized, and my God, I love saying that, past use still hovers between 30 and 40%, and perception of risk still hovers between 20 and 30%. Maybe we've reached the equilibrium where kids understand the actual risks of cannabis use. And if you want those kids to understand the actual risks of cannabis use on developing adolescent brains, which there are, you can't gain their trust with commercials of eggs in frying pans. Now, there's a few other points in this video I want to debunk here, and I'll take some of these into hour two as well, but here's a couple bonuses. Number 6, Crowder notes that people buy weed at dispensaries and sell it to kids. He posits that the cartels won't go away because people who make their living through crime will find another crime with which to make their living. Okay, so then we should give the marijuana market to criminals? No matter what we do, some kids are going to get their hands on weed. Just like beer. But when a kid gets a hold of some beer, no violent murdering criminal organization profits. Now, maybe a homeless guy earns $20 buying a 12-pack for some teenagers, and the money that got spent at the store at least provided some jobs and some tax revenue for the state, which then can use some of it for alcoholism treatment for some kid who got started drinking too young. With marijuana, the kid doesn't even have to find the homeless guy. He just goes and finds another kid at the school who's the school weed dealer. And did you ever notice you never see any school beer dealers? Another point that he makes here, when Cauliflower Ear guy shows up, you know, the former cop, warns us that it's a myth that no one's ever died from a THC-involved accident. Yeah, I'm sure you didn't get that ear fighting straw men like this one. We have never said that nobody dies from marijuana-related accidents. We say nobody dies from marijuana, as in acute toxic overdose. Of course people can die in pot-related wrecks. So why aren't we calling for a return to alcohol prohibition? And why aren't we banning in-car dash computer systems and stereo systems? I mean, there's all sorts of irresponsible behaviors people engage in while they're driving that cause wrecks. But marijuana prohibition did not stop those wrecks, and it may contribute to them by failing to provide users a social construct for responsible marijuana use. Just look at the stats for drunk driving, which have dropped greatly since the advent of Mothers Against Drunk Driving in the 1980s, an increase in the drinking age to age 21, and a decrease in blood alcohol limits to 0.08, plus a strong educational campaign on drunk driving and better trained police officers and more drunk driving patrols. But there is no friends don't let friends drive stoned commercial on TV. Furthermore, I received a report from Paul Armentano, his latest research and PowerPoint presentation that he's doing on cannabis and driving. Very interesting statistic comes from one of the studies that's on there. This is a, now pull this up on my Twitter because I put it out just a little bit earlier. This was a study from 2005 called the Lawman Study, and it found that the fatal crash risk for marijuana drivers at greater than 5 nanograms per milliliter is 2.12 times greater than a sober driver. But alcohol, people between 0.05 and 0.08, in other words, legal to drive, 6.29 times greater than a sober driver. Or another way to look at this, while a stoned driver or a driver with high tolerance might be twice the risk for a fatal crash at 5 nanograms, he's one-third the risk for a crash than someone who's a legal drinking driver. Think about that. We'll talk a little bit more about this Crowder video. Got a couple other points to make on this. Plus, I'd love to hear your comments and questions on this, whether you think it's satire or the real thing. Do you know people that think this way? I sure do. We'll take your calls at 971-533-7111 right here at Toker Talk Radio. And I've also invited Steven Crowder on the show. I sent him a tweet and a comment. You're welcome to call in, Stephen. Let us know, is this satire, really? Or do you really believe this stuff? And by the way, I'm a little tougher to debate than a crazy old man with schizophrenia or some teenager in Ann Arbor. So you've been warned. That's all the time we've got for Hour 1. Thanks for joining us. For everyone here helping to produce the Russ Belville Show. And big thanks to our big donors. I'll tell you more about that on tomorrow's show. Brave Michaela's on tomorrow's show as well. Make sure you tune in. For Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. Take a seat, you're planning, you're growing, you're giant, you're rolling.